We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello there, my name is Matt Harvey, and I am your host for yet another variant of the Bearer of Weird News. This particular variant, the moronic variant. It is dangerous. It is nasty. You better watch out. It is coming for you. The moronic variant will move into a neighborhood near you, causing a significant amount of white flight, driving white people into the country where they can hide until all people of a working class position are infected, and then they will walk around and start coughing into their fruit and sending it out further into the country in a form of biological warfare. Then, of course, from the moronic variant will come the imbecilic variant. Around probably January 2022, the imbecilic variant has a first-generation variant, will have legal rights to vote, and will start to fill in newer states on the outer suburbs. Sure, at first these places will be deemed as risky neighborhoods, but it will take pressure off the climate migrants who will start to appear by boat due to the lack of government's action on climate change. Because we're still taking care of the COVID outbreak, and as we all know, we can only do one thing at a time as a government. Yes, we can only handle one issue ever at a time, especially when they only plan on working 10 days between now and August 2022. Whew. Thank you for tuning in again. I'd like to start off the top here just by letting people know where I'm going to be next year. Yes, I've got a couple of festivals locked in. It is exciting, and I'm a little unsure about it all. I haven't been in a big room of people for a while, so please come out, please support the show. I am doing a brand new show. It's called Wage Against the Machine. It is a storytelling show. It is a satire show. It is a social commentary show. If you enjoy the material that's in this podcast, I think you'll enjoy it in a similar vein. It is stories about jobs that I used to work at and the issues that I encountered while working at those places. I'll be in Adelaide at a beautiful little theatre. I can't remember the dates, but I will be sure to put the dates somewhere on the screen. If you're listening to this, maybe I'll put them in at the end. And I will be doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Of course, they're doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I'm just locking in venues and I'm sorting out dates at the moment. But those two, you can guarantee, will be the first couple of runs of Wage Against the Machine. But until then, I will be the Bearer of Weird News. So let's get into it. Let's begin with some headlines. Yes, it's Word of the Year time, and the first of the words of the year have been declared. Merriam-Webster has declared its Word of the Year to be vaccine, though about 10% of its readers refuse to recognize the word and have been rioting out the front of the office with signs that are illegible, really, but we assume that they say, you can't force me to use your words, my vocabulary, my choice, and complaining that the word is a new, untested word, and that we don't really know anything about the word, despite the fact that the word's been around for many, many years, and we've been perfecting the word for a long time. Oxford Languages is having a similar problem. Their word of the year, vax. See, that's what happens when you try to be cool. Oxford Languages, just stick to your old school. Maybe the word of the year should have been plague doctor for you. Cambridge Dictionary has thrown the unexpected and frankly quite off-brand for 2021 word, perseverance. And though it is somewhat relevant, the distinctly Australian word the National Dictionary Centre has chosen for its word of the year, a word inspired by Scott Morrison and will forever reflect his legacy as Prime Minister. What have they chosen? They've chosen strollout. Yes, that's right, a strollout. A heavy swing at satirists who spend their days thinking of new ways to make fun of a man who keeps making the same damn mistakes over and over again, or, as he prefers to think of them, things he never thought we'd know about. Whereas Collins Dictionary has chosen a genuinely questionable word of the year for the year of our Sun Lord Ra 2021, they chose NFT, which beat out crypto, not only for word of the year, but for environmentally damaging linguistic concept of the year. So congratulations, NFT. It's a effort well achieved. And this is seemingly appropriate, as the slow response to climate change will mean that the 2022 word of the year will be the ACT has criminalized the act of stealthing, the non-consensual removal of a condom during sex. Now, if only the ACT could criminalize the act of political stealthing, where you quietly remove funds from the taxpayer and distribute them amongst your friends. New Zealanders in Wellington gathered in front of Parliament House to protest vaccination mandates. Rioters gathered in what News Hub called images reminiscent of the January 6th riots in America. When Americans gathered to storm the Capitol building, some entering with criminal intent and others chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." So, let's have a look at the news coverage of the riots in New Zealand.
Protesters tearing through the barricades on the front steps.
Well, yes, we can see here that they are breaking through the fence at Parliament. Oh, and there they are. They are fixing the fence. They are also fixing the fence at Parliament, presumably apologising for making a fuss. After all,
then, because it's not the States, it's New Zealand.
Scenes like this haven't been seen in New Zealand since that time that the police had to disperse a one-man anti-lockdown protest in Auckland. Truly, truly chilling images. While we're in New Zealand, the often controversial New Zealand Bird of the Year competition has come around again, and while there has been no voter fraud this year, the results have still come through as unusual, because the 2021 New Zealand Bird of the Year is the bat. The bat? Are we serious? The bat? The pekka pekka long-tailed bat found its way onto the list because, according to Forest and Bird, the department that runs the competition, they said it was to highlight that they face the same threats as the birds. This is the third year in a row that the Bird of the Year competition has run hot with controversy. Makes me think that there is more going on here than meets the eye. Something foul is happening. And I will be starting my own truth-telling network, QAvian. I will make contact with an insider and expose the truth. We have nothing to go on but a wing and a prayer. But if I have learned anything from this last 2 years, people love a good conspiracy theory. So I should be able to make some pretty good bank. I mean, exposing some pretty good truths real soon. Heinz has increased prices on more than half of its products in its home market, the US, and other markets across the world. Heinz chief executive, head bean counter, and man awaiting you to discover it was silent but deadly, Miguel Patricio, spilled the beans that consumers would need to be all cool beans with higher food prices, given that the world's population was rising, whilst the amount of land on which to grow food was not. But if Patricio thinks that we will stand idly by while they overtly raise prices, then he doesn't know beans about people. People eat their beans because they're cheap, and abandoning their bean company doesn't amount to a hill of beans to most people. So Heinz, best be careful, or they'll find their customers will say Jell-O to a new, cheaper form of beans, as they will no longer swallow the Kool-Aid of the Heinz company. They might be poor, but we've got some smart ones out here. See, what he's not expecting is for people to break their shopping habits. which is real classic company behavior. You see, they think that we're too lazy to change after we find that first original juice company, that our loyalty will form a golden circle around them. But to change our shopping habits, we will need to not only know the brands, but give our shopping habits a real shake and bake. Though I am unsure where people will learn the names of the products of the subsidiaries owned by the Heinz company, so customers can move to Green Sea. But people interested in doing so can go online and look up the company's subsidiaries. It's easier than shooting fish in a cracker barrel. NFTs, the hottest new clout way to launder a whole lot of ill-gotten money while looking damn cool and destroying the environment. They are here to stay, at least until the government shuts down the fun and installs an NFT czar to ensure NFT dealers are playing nice. An Australian artist and programmer has created a website called NFT Bay that claims to let people download every NFT on the Ethereum blockchain in one go. And all of this in a handy and accessible 17 terabyte file. Finally, the ordinary man can get his digital hands on such classics as Nyan Cat. I just never thought I'd see it in real life. See it for myself in person. It's a thing of beauty. Let him go. God bless you, Nyan Cat. Good news, Melburnians. Melbourne has become the cheapest capital city to rent a house in Australia, according to a domain report. We did it, guys. We did it. Cue the celebration music. Cue the... No? We're not? Where's the music? Oh, I see. See, the new data has revealed that the impact of COVID-19 lockdowns have caused this shift in the rental market. Finally, I guess, some good news from Melbourne, as we can work our way back to being the world's most livable city again. So what happened? Why aren't we getting any good news music? Was it massive price drops? Was it winning better working conditions? Was it pay rises? What are we looking for? Well, overall, the cost of renting a house did not fall over the September quarter. Nope. The latest domain report simply found that they just didn't rise. Oh, that's why we didn't get the celebration music. Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So that means that Melbourne has fallen to last place simply because the cost of renting has continued to rise everywhere else. So Melbourne has taken what's called the Stephen Bradbury approach, falling so far behind that our failure eventually turns into a victory. And given Australia's naming conventions for buildings in the public, including the Harold Holt Swimming Centre and the Bradbury Ice Rink, we can expect the new housing towers to be called the COVID Towers. Why not at this point, eh? Speaking of towers, Berliners have backed one of Europe's most radical responses to gentrification, seizing property from what they call mega landlords. Mega landlords are when you get all five of the buildings that you own and then you like fuse them together to form one mega lord action figure. Available in all good toy stores. They would, of course, have used the Megalord to fight the forces of Welfare Queen, who has used her magic money tree to make her money patrol grow! Locals supported the decision of expropriating by 56% to 39%, though this still needs to go through the courts before it becomes a law, so fingers crossed there. The campaign is named after Deutsch Wohnen, a private landlord that held more than 110,000 apartments in Berlin and could see private landlords that hold more than 3,000 units have them expropriated and folded into the city's affordable housing stock. This would socialize more than 240,000 apartments, enough to house roughly 27% of the homeless population in Germany. And we anticipate a big pushback against this new initiative. But given it will currently only house around 27% of the homeless, there will still be a subdivision of homeless people versus formerly homeless people for the right-wing media to turn against each other. It is their favourite pastime after all. Australia has only delivered 8% of the 60 million COVID vaccinations that we pledged to developing countries within the region. This failure to deliver for our Pacific neighbours is a continuation of what Scott Morrison describes as the Australian way of dealing with the needs of our neighbours. A recently released report by the People's Vaccine Alliance found pharmaceutical companies and wealthy nations had delivered just 1 in 7 of the vaccination doses promised to developing countries through the Global Vaccine Sharing COVAX initiative. A spokesperson from the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade said shots were expected to be rolled out in the coming months. I mean, it's just nice to know that we aren't the only country that our government is letting down. It's just a real relief. It makes us feel part of the neighborhood. I mean, we're a bit isolationist most of the time, so this is how we integrate with the locals. The Morrison government has proposed a bill that would introduce voter ID laws in the next election, meaning all voters would be asked to present identification to crack down on alleged voter fraud. Ooh. The proposed law will ensure that when voters appear at the election, they are sure to have their LNP party membership before casting a vote. These kinds of laws have been successfully used in the US to disenfranchise voters of colour and lower socioeconomic status. This appears to be in contrast of the Prime Minister's previous stance during the Black Lives Matter protests when he warned against importing the things that are happening overseas to Australia. And he's right. Australia doesn't import American problems to Australia. We export Australians to American problems. And we salute you, problem solvers, standing tall, fighting America's problems on America's behalf. A Wikipedia user claiming to be Liberal MP Tim Wilson has been blocked from editing the website after they suggested removing negative aspects from an article about Tim Wilson. The recommended changes attempted to smooth some of the edges off the harsher aspects of Wilson's Wikipedia entry. They pointed to Crikey, Huffington Post, Junkie, and Michael West Media as being inappropriate for Wikipedia citations. The publication has an agenda covering the rising power of corporations over democracy, that person claimed, as opposed to politicians in the coalition who have an agenda to cover up the rising power of corruptions over democracy. And that's the end of headlines. First, we're going to look at upcoming election news. While the Morrison government is worried about citizens of Australia and them potentially committing some sort of fraud in the next election, Zali Steggall, on an appearance on The Project, spoke about how it is perfectly legal to lie in political ads, which was checked and confirmed by ABC Fact Check. So what happens next? Who will be the one to take the reins and save us from misinformation? Well, unlikely contender and misinformation manufacturer Facebook has proposed it will join with the Australian Associated Press Newswire service, that it will roll out videos that they are calling Check the Facts as Australia prepares for a federal election campaign that could be filled with misinformation and disinformation. The videos will encourage people to critically examine information that they are presented with and improve overall media literacy, a complicated process in Australia, as around 64.2%, roughly two-thirds of the news media in Australia, is owned by the Willy Wonka of lies himself, Rupert Murdoch. The Associated Press will also provide material on how to identify misinformation. While I have not seen the materials, I assume it will look a lot like, if your angry Uncle Rupert shared it, it's bound to be manipulated nonsense. or the Ghostbusters logo, but like with Rupert Murdoch's face in that and that cross instead of a ghost. Although it does look like a ghost. It might strike you as a bold, nay, audacious thing for Facebook to come out and try to stop misinformation after being hit with a series of revelations by whistleblower and person who brought receipts when they declared evil company is evil, Francis Haugen, who went to the trouble of confirming what we all already knew. Facebook is putting profits before safety. Haugen told Australian MPs that Facebook should be forced to publish a daily list of trending links to allow authorities to quickly quash misinformation on the platform. A list that would compete with the Wunsch manuscript as the hardest piece of text to make sense of in human history. It's a real thing, look it up. Wunsch manuscript. Some of us will be confused for thinking the election cycle had begun already, as Clive Palmer's United Australia Party is already pumping millions into advertising months out of the election, having spent already $1.2 million on YouTube ads alone since Craig Kelly took over as party leader. And I get it. I get it. It is fun to spend other people's money. And when you've got an idiot with a seemingly unlimited fountain of money, go for it. And a lot of these ads are like 10 minutes, which is definitely more direct exposure any healthy person should have to Craig Kelly at any given moment. He's worse for you than the sun under the Australian sky. It should be an interesting election season, that's for sure, as Australia's High Court ruled in September that the owners of social media pages were responsible for the comments posted on those pages. And social media is going to be the battlefield of the 2022 election. Unless Scott Morrison's scorched earth social media comments is followed through. Morrison has labelled social media forums a coward's palace and flagged law changes to remove safe harbour protections for companies like Facebook if they refuse to reveal who's behind anonymous comments. Because there should be no space that someone can flagrantly denounce and say untruths about people unless that place is Parliament, where all speech is protected speech, making it the first safe space occupied by the parliamentary snowflakes. Morrison said they should have to identify who they are. And you know, the companies, if they're not going to say who they are, well, they're not a platform anymore. They're a publisher. What? How does that change them from a platform to a public? If anything, that makes them more of a platform. Because all they're doing is raising them up. They're not publishing them. But you know what? As much as I am against most things Morrison says, this identifying people who make some statements on social media should be looked at seriously. After all, we don't want to leave the possibility of someone like, say, Angus Taylor being able to leave comments under false accounts about how Angus Taylor is doing a good job. Nice job, Angus. He needs to be held accountable for spreading misinformation. On to climate inaction news. Australia, the unofficial home of climate change, has been ranked last among the developed nations on climate performance and pledges. In the lead up to COP26, the Climate Council had labelled Australia the worst performing developed country in a report the Minister for Industry, Energy and Emissions Reduction, Angus Taylor, called misleading and complete rubbish. And these guys are surprised that nobody showed up to listen to Morrison speak at COP26.
Optimism as we gather here.
Some optimism, but plenty of scepticism too among COP delegates.
We all saw that coming. Nobody attends the press conferences held by the guy who came in last place at the Olympics, unless that person is Stephen Bradbury. Maybe this is what Morrison means when he uses the vague phrase, the Australian way, that all the countries ahead of us will fall over, and by virtue of being so far behind, we will manage to come out in front. And honestly, there is no reason to suspect that Australia is falling behind its OECD friends and counterparts. After all, it's not like we've become a dumping ground for more dangerous and polluting cars, as the federal government has not adopted international emissions standards. We would never do that. Footage of the outdated cars has been obtained by the Bureau of Weird News. So, can we see a clip? More than 80% of the global car market now follows Euro 6 vehicle emission standards, including Europe, the United States, Japan, Korea, China, India, and Mexico. But Australia has resisted signing up to the standards, which would require more stringent restrictions on pollutants in petrol, and require new cars to emit far less particulate matter than currently allowed. And why should we? It's not like we have infinite sunshine countrywide. And as Scott Morrison has made clear,
it's not going to tow your trailer. It's not going to tow your boat. It's not going to get you out to your favourite camping spot with your family. Bill Shorten wants to end the weekend.
And electric vehicles certainly can't support your living blood bag as you chase down infidels in the desert. It's the Australian way. This is all according to a submission to a federal parliamentary inquiry into road safety. And even if the government signed onto Euro 6 fuel today, it would be years before the country was ready. And car manufacturers say this has made it difficult to sell their best vehicles in Australia, which require better quality fuel. So they're actually harming their good friend, the economy. Apparently the market is supposed to decide these things, but it seems that they aren't making room for the market to flourish when they're dumping millions in subsidies straight into the laps of coal companies. And not only is it costing the economy, but also it will cost people, you people, the good taxpayers, $1 trillion in health expenses by 2050 if we don't boost the take-up of electric vehicles, according to a new report released by the Australian Conservation Foundation. The report said, a rapid transition of the entire private car fleet to EV by 2035, when coupled with better public transport systems, would see $492 billion in costs avoided. But we will not be committing to such lofty targets as saving $492 billion for the Australian taxpayer. No. They refused to pay a copay for Medicare years ago, which definitely would have meant that some of the costs would have been saved and could better be invested in parking lots and Olympic class sports training facilities for small towns with no real connection to the sport. If only they had committed. Well, I guess this is their fault now. Besides, it's not a race. It's not a race. It's not a race to get to EV cars first, and if it were, well, Norway would be the Usain Bolt of the race, if Usain Bolt realised that the starting pistol had been fired 20 years ago and actually started casually strolling towards the finish line while everyone else sat down and had 26 public summits about what could we possibly do about the dying planet. I mean, it's embarrassing that the Minister for Industry, Energy and Emissions, Angus Taylor, promoted Australia as a good place to invest in fossil fuel projects at COP26 in the year of our dying planet 2021. I mean, he isn't wrong. It certainly is a good place to invest in fossil fuel projects because it's one of the only places left where you can still make fossil fuel deals. So it's pretty good. Well, it's no wonder that Bill Hare, the chief executive of Climate Analytics, said Australia was hiding behind others, including Brazil, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, which are all trying to weaken the negotiating text. Because we are. We were one of several nations that did not support an agreement at COP26 talks requiring all countries to return to the negotiating table next year with stronger commitments to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. I mean, he wasn't wrong. Australia never undergoes international action without having a larger and scarier country to hide behind. I mean, we go to war for fossil fuels all the time. And this isn't any different. We finally have the courage to go to war for fossil fuels of our own volition. We don't need a big Uncle Sam to hide behind this time. We even have detractors, like any good war does. Former PMs Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull lashed out at the Morrison government's cynical indifference and empty rhetoric as they assured Pacific leaders a majority of Australians are in your corner. I mean, the reassurance came in a letter to Pacific leaders, which kind of undermines the message a little bit. If you're going to send a reassuring message to the neighbours you are watching drown over the back fence due to your negligent use of natural resources, maybe don't send them a letter written on a natural resource. Just strikes me as a little bit insensitive. And while Kevin Rudd attempted to curb emissions by not removing the carbon tax that was already in place in his time, Turnbull has had a long, complicated history with emissions. Approving multiple coal mines, overseeing a rise in emissions, ignoring advice that renewable energy was not to blame for the South Australian blackouts, and during his run in 2017, in an interview with the Sydney Morning Herald, Monash University economist Jacob Madsen said of Australia's economy, "The Australian economy is far too undiversified, deriving a large part of its foreign income from a few minerals and agricultural products." At this point, we are basically the weed dealer that nobody would hang out with if they just made cannabis legal. It's true. But sure, take some pot shots from the sidelines. You guys are in good company after all. Have a look here. David Attenborough taking pot shots at the PM. Ho ho ho! Shots fired. But, you know, you expect this sort of shit from lefty, greeny David Attenborough. He was responsible for Monty Python getting on the BBC. He has no idea what it is to be financially responsible. What does a conservative businessman say? What's Twiggy Forrest up to, right? That's chicken on Twiggy. Ooh. Seems he and Mike Cannon-Brookes, the Altasian co-founder, are investors in the world's biggest solar farm in the middle of the Northern Territory. A giant power cable from the Simpson Desert to Singapore, which will give the 5.5 million strong island metropolis up to 15% of its total power needs, which comes to about roughly 3% of Australia's electricity needs a year. I did the maths, I checked. Even mining magnate Twiggy, I tried to overturn native title in WA Forest, is investing in solar farms. Come on. But why invest in renewable energy when we can rely on Australians to do the work themselves and then you get to wear the shine of their hard work? Particularly after a third draft text from the UN COP26 climate summit urged nations to accelerate the phase out of unfiltered coal and inefficient coal fuel subsidies after large emitters tried to remove the mention of polluting fuels. This text omitted any reference to specific finance for loss and damage, which has been a key demand of poorer nations, because it should be. We should be paying these guys. Oh well, while we are toning down the text, let's take a look at the phase out phrasing. Seems a little strong. Can we make something a little less clear with a less obvious target? What can we do instead? Oh, here we go. Looks like we are going to phase down the sector to address climate change. Well, that should definitely take care of the problem. No worries at all. It's not like climate scientists have slammed our response to climate change as comically flawed in our approach to ignoring the most abundant natural resource that we have, sunshine! And it's not like we're putting our economy at risk by refusing to invest in development of existing technologies, which would actually serve to reduce around 80% of Australia's emissions if we actually bothered to take the time to invest in implementing them. No, don't be silly. It's just good to see that we're acting in a way that will set a good example and shows that we're taking our responsibilities, particularly to our neighbours, so very seriously. After all, we're following the Australian approach. And in Australia, we look after our neighbours. Even former carbon tax skeptic and man who can't believe he successfully pulled off this grift, Matthias Cormann, has called for better global approach on carbon pricing. Matthias Cormann, of all people, Matthias Cormann used a speech as head of the OECD to urge countries to adopt an effective and fair approach to implementing a price on carbon emissions. But Matthias, is this you?
The people of Australia don't want this carbon tax.
Because it sure sounds like you. Nobody else in the parliament has that Schwarzenegger-sounding accent. We don't do foreigners, even if they are citizens. I mean, let's face it, we don't even do most citizens, even if they are citizens. What about this? Is this you?
And the people of Australia will judge her harshly for the deceit inflicted on them before the last election. History and the Australian people will judge every single Labor member and senator harshly for supporting a tax which clearly is not in our national interest, which clearly is going to inflict a lot of harm on household budgets, on the economy, without doing anything to help reduce global greenhouse gas emissions.
Silly Matthias Cormann, you don't know what you want. Moving on now to the scary truth of history news. Education Minister, a man worried that he didn't actually remove that piece about Nazis from his stand-up. You should really look into that. Expressed that he was concerned school curriculum changes could convey a negative view of our history. I mean, I don't see what he's worried about. Apparently, we can just stick to the truth. In 1776, white people arrived here, met the locals, declared the place was empty despite meeting the locals, moved in and claimed squatters' rights. After all, nobody was living here, and had some skirmishes with some locals who weren't actually here before, but they just kind of manifested at some point, full of local knowledge. Stole a bunch of said locals to re-educate them, started digging up some rocks, brought in some foreigners who we underpaid, and then made laws limiting non-white migration, and then elected in Pauline Hanson. But, you know, on the plus side, we invented Wi-Fi. So it's not all bad. You just tell people that. Tudge has called for the overhaul national curriculum to have a greater focus on Western history, after indicating current proposals would not help lift educational standards. Because if you aren't learning about white people, you aren't learning. At least not anything that can be used to help you bond with 80% of CEOs who are white men. Previously, he said that the changes would lead to students having a hatred of Australia, including such commemorations as Anzac Day, saying Anzac Day should not be a contested idea. It is the most sacred day in the Australian calendar, which is very well understood by mainstream Australians. It is by far and away the most important day on the Australian calendar, and kids should be learning about what it means to Australians. But oddly, he hasn't made a motion to remove the coalition from power. And most people that I speak to have a negative view of Australia, have gotten it from the LibNat policies, actions, and hypocrisy. So, like, I don't... understand how he hasn't made action on this. Now, the previous draft of the curriculum from April said that the changes may involve debating the difference between commemoration and celebration of war. Something that we can't have when we are so keen to follow our friends and allies in the AUKUS into every single war. So we need to like war, I guess. Just makes sense. The minister said in his speech that he was concerned there was not enough focus on concepts such as Australia's liberal democracy, suggesting young Australians would not be willing to support and defend those ideas. I am not convinced that Tudge has been paying much attention recently. I've seen a bunch of Australians who have been incensed about the state of Australia and seem to want to express those opinions via organised and sometimes illegal demonstrations. But they have yet to go to war for a pretend ideal. I mean, it's a disgrace, really. Don't they know that the only way to defend your ideas is by blowing up a wedding party or two in the name of democracy? And not one of those protests have done that. The old school ideals have truly died. No wonder he is so concerned about the state of education. Maybe I'm all turned around on this issue. Moving on now to punishment for not doing your job. New tax commissioner and Tim Burton Batman pretending to be just a regular man, Chris Jordan, is facing a Senate investigation. Jordan is facing this investigation by the Senate Privileges Committee, with Labor, the Greens, and the crossbench banding together in a bid to force him to reveal details about the JobKeeper wage subsidy scheme. And he is facing the reality of being a public figure when the public starts to learn your name after you did something real bad. The Senate ordered Jordan to reveal the names of businesses with a turnover of $10 million that received taxpayer funds. But he has refused, citing privacy provisions. Privacy provisions? Oh, my friend! The sub-judice period is over once we know for sure that they did something. They don't get to steal from the taxpayers and not face the false anger of saying that we will boycott them until we are desperate at Christmas time and have no time to order presents, so we tell ourselves that it's just this one time, but next year, we will definitely boycott them. Oh! Outrageous. Independent Senator, and uncle you need to listen to carefully before agreeing with him, Rex Patrick, has been one of the most vocal in demanding greater transparency in the scheme, citing the approach of the New Zealand government in publishing a list of employees who receive support under a similar program, failing to realise that this is not how you convince an Australian to do anything, by comparing them to a New Zealander coming in and being like, well, New Zealand's doing it. That's not gonna work. After all, we don't do things just because other countries are doing them. Not when it comes to dangerous policies like climate change and economic accountability of businesses. No. We only do things because everyone else is doing them when they are a safe and admirable policy, like, say, a war. That has been our clear policy for years now. Patrick's motion to refer the commissioner for investigation succeeded, 25 votes to 21. And then Patrick said, it is a lawful order, and just as he might be given any order to carry out something in accordance with the police direction or a court direction, the same applies for the Senate. I mean, I don't know if you've been following the news recently, Patrick, but the police aren't really considered the model for civil responsibility that they once were. I would just be careful when making comparisons. But then word started getting around that this Chris Jordan could be jailed for refusing to release the information, as apparently the information was not in the public interest. Whew. My friend, I can tell you, my very funny joker friend, I'm interested. And the volume of news articles around this very matter tells me that there's more than a little public interest on the matter. So make with the paper. Chop, chop. Although it shouldn't surprise listeners of this podcast that Labour, the Greens and the Crossbench joined forces in support of greater transparency, like a Voltron of common sense. And coalition senators voting against Patrick's motion, well, that's not like them at all. Using a public service to secretly siphon off public money into the hands of businesses that don't deserve it, and then failing to face consequences? I don't know where this behaviour is coming from. They've never acted out like this before. It's really weird, and it's just so very out of character. In a statement, Jordan said that he acknowledged the Senate's powers, the same way that I acknowledge that PSO have powers. Sure, I know that they have them, but I don't plan on listening to them anytime soon. Saying, one of my fundamental roles as Commissioner of Taxation is to safeguard the integrity of the tax and super systems by ensuring the community's confidence in taxpayer secrecy is maintained. Hey Chris, buddy, you know what would really help me, help people have confidence in the tax system? Just a little suggestion. Using it to prosecute more than just the poorest members of society. That'd probably really help us with our confidence. The inquiry will give the commissioner an opportunity to comply with the Senate order. And Patrick said that Jordan was unlikely to face jail time. Oh, excellent. Yeah, great. That's really gonna scare him. Scare him right down to his core. An opportunity, and he won't face. He's unlikely to face jail time. Whoa, shaking in my boots. And ATO employees wonder why we hate them. It's not the taxes. The taxes do all the good things, like Medicare and keeping government friends in contracts. Those things are fine. It's the audacity of calling someone who has just lost the job that they need in order to lock in a payment plan for tax that they owe, or else you'll charge them interest. You are more contrarian than a 40-year-old Jordan Peterson fan.
I think you'll find that if you just clean your room, you'll see the wage gap doesn't exist and that the money was hidden under your dirty clothes all along.
This is why you need to keep an eye out for the centrists. They're all fire and brimstone until it comes to following through with the punishment. Then suddenly, they don't want to hurt anybody. That way they can appease their indecisive base who believes in the power of justice to make people feel bad, but actually punishing them. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's a little bit extreme, buddy. Let's not go too far. The inquiry will report back to the Senate and make some recommendations, and then the full Senate will determine the next course of action. Patrick said by not including a clawback method in the scheme, the Treasurer had made a massive prudential failure, which strongly implies that he thinks this was designed to fairly distribute money on an as-needs basis, and that it wasn't designed to send $13 billion of taxpayer money from the taxpayer's wallet to the wallets of investors and executives. And he won't commit to revealing the names of the companies, even though nearly one in three JobKeeper applicants weren't eligible for taxpayer support, according to the ATO's own analysis. I mean, come on. Josh Frydenberg was warned less than 3 months into JobKeeper that millions were going to firms with rising turnovers, in some cases recording bumper profits. Frydenberg knew in mid-June last year that 15% of JobKeeper businesses sampled had boosted their turnovers in April and would only change the eligibility criteria in late September. Between July and September, at least $10 billion went to firms that increased turnovers. $10 billion! And that is why they call themselves the Party of Good Economic Management. They manage the economy like Jeff Bezos manages Amazon. They make money disappear legally. Pants on Fire news now. A young and upcoming Australian politician has gotten themselves in trouble by saying something foolish on the radio. The politician in question is Liberal Party hopeful Scott Morrison. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. If you haven't, Morrison came to fame by telling a crowd of people on camera that former PM Malcolm Turnbull was his PM right before fronting a campaign to take his job. Well, the man was heard making the claim that he believes that he's never lied in public office on 3AW, a generally safe place for lies to be spread. And boy, have people really taken to supporting him on this matter. Do we have a clip?
Wasting their time or coming back completely negative, so...
Oh, if only there was some sort of way to proving what a Prime Minister has said. Alas, we don't live in a world where we document and replay video time and time again for clicks and advertising money in an endless non-stop cycle of news, repetition and outrage. Oh, if only we did. And unfortunately, there is no footage that during the 2019 election, Morrison claimed that electric vehicles couldn't tow boats or caravans or reach camping spots, and that Bill Shorten wants to end the weekend when it comes to his electric vehicle policy. Nope, no footage at all. Oh, we must have slipped into some sort of multiverse where statements are checkable and maybe, just maybe, actions have consequences. Well, that would explain why he's suddenly against the idea of holding people to account. Despite his recent passion for holding online trolls accountable in his aggressive crackdown on the sharing of the bad things Scott Morrison has done on social media. Silly, silly boy. Morrison told reporters, "The online world should not be a wild west where bots and bigots and trolls and others can be anonymously going around and can harm people and hurt people, harass them, and bully them, and sledge them. Ooh, bots and bigots and trolls, oh my. Bots and bigots and trolls, oh my. Bots and bigots and trolls, oh my." He then went on to explain that the sort of behaviour is only acceptable and protected under parliamentary privilege, or if you've been making sizable donations to the Liberal Party / own 70% of Australia's written media. It is their platinum tier membership benefit, after all. Under the laws, platforms will be forced to expose the identity of any individuals who anonymously post defamatory or damaging material. Although, he didn't seem to mind the use of trolling and memes when it was the 2019 election and he was hiring Topham Gurans, seen here posing for the cover of Smug Cunt Magazine Teamwork Edition. Here, he is laying out the guidelines for making people angry on social media.
"I'm from TG, or Topham Gurran, and we run political and non-political campaigns around the world. Most recently, last weekend, we had a relatively successful result here in Australia, and we had a digital team embedded in the Liberal Party that helped to get the result that made most of the people, I think, in this room relatively happy. Both of these memes on the right perform better than the two tack graphics on the left. So what's the lesson here? Style guides are the death of engagement. If you're desperate to make sure that everything you do is compliant with your head of creative, then people aren't going to find what you're doing particularly interesting. You've got to surprise people, you've got to shock people, you've got to unlock an arousal emotion in people, right? People talk a lot about engagement, and engagement is a response of emotion. We all know that, right? Like, we're not going to interact with something if we don't care about it. But the particular emotions that we need to unlock are arousal emotions. We're talking anger, excitement, pride, fear. Your content should be relating to one of these emotions for anyone to give a damn about it."
Deliberately going out of your way to create a piece of content that is evocative of extreme emotion sounds like trolling to me. But it couldn't be, because trolling is bad. The PM just said so. What's that? Oh, I see, sorry. It's only bad if it's anonymous. It's only bad if it's anonymous, guys. If you know that you have paid someone to carefully construct a campaign of attacking and damaging material, then we're all good. Troll away, my friends, because we know who did it. Although no word yet on what the laws have to say on receiving anonymous, life-changing amounts of money to fight defamation cases that you initiated. Weird how that works out. And as Zali Stegel has made some, frankly, defamatory and damaging claims that the laws of advertising don't apply to political campaigns and that politicians can just lie and scare anyone with any old claim, You better be careful, Zali. How can you imply that the government has been so careless in previous elections as to straight up tell untruths or terminological inexactitudes, as is the preferred parlance? It doesn't matter that the ABC fact checkers claimed that it's true, why would it? The ABC has proven that it is a state-run propaganda machine that hates the state that runs it. Yeah, that makes sense. So really, it is a shadow state-run propaganda machine in a fight with the actual state for control of hearts and minds, if I am understanding the narrative. And given that he never plans to actually be accountable as the version of accountability that he has created, instead of a federal ICAC called the Commonwealth Integrity Commission, is just a real piece of shit. It's so bad that the Centre for Public Integrity has rejected the draft of it as not fit for purpose because of a few small things that surely won't be a problem down the road. Let's have a look at what some of these small things are, shall we? Firstly, it doesn't allow the commission to launch its own investigations, which is okay, yeah. Nor does it allow members of the public to refer suspected corruption. Okay, well, that seems a little bit odd, but okay. Nor will there be any opportunities for public hearings. But if it ever gets a commission off the ground, as unlikely as that might be given the lack of powers to start a commission, then the government says its proposed model would have greater investigative powers than a royal commission to hold hearings and compel witnesses to testify. Ooh, powerful. If we've learned any lessons from the deluge of Spider-Man in the last decade, it is that with great power comes great responsibility. And if they want to have this great power, greater than a royal commission, then they must be willing to accept that it needs to be counterbalanced with the inability to start up one of these all-powerful investigations, because absolute power corrupts absolutely, so it is better that you're not allowed to access it in the first place, if I am understanding the narrative. And to help mitigate this power, we have made the models definition of corruption too narrow, and the threshold for referral of public officials would be too high. So that helps counterbalance that. It also excludes anyone outside the public sector who dishonestly or improperly influences decision making. So it's a great opportunity to outsource some of your more corrupt and dishonest deeds to workers outside of the public sector, thus creating a new shadow economy of jobs. Do you see how it all builds on top of each other? Not to mention that it sets a higher bar for corruption, because alleged public sector misconduct can only be investigated if it would constitute a criminal offence. Not that it matters at all what powers are in the May 2021 budget. The finances previously set aside for the CIC in October of 2020 went from anything to nothing, as can be seen here. So it's no wonder that the PM's office has failed to meet deadlines for the majority of freedom of information requests within the past year. They don't feel like they have anything that they're going to need to worry about. Complaints about the government's handling of freedom of information requests have actually shot up 39% in a single year, while refusal rates and delays also worsened. Scott Morrison's office again failed to meet lawful timeframes in the majority of freedom of information requests it received, according to the latest Office of the Australian Information Commission's annual report. And honestly, as we've been talking about, why should he? Not only has he set up a toothless integrity commission, but it won't have the power to look back on problems of the past due to the impossibly high standards that he refuses to live by. No need to worry if nobody's ever going to investigate you. It is very simple maths. The Prime Minister's office was singled out as one of the agencies that declined fewer than 50% of freedom of information requests within the statutory timeframes in 2020 to 2021. This includes breaching freedom of information laws for the Brittany Higgins incident. The request, made by an anonymous member of the public, asked for emails sent or received by a specific assistant secretary within a 2-month window which contained the keyword Brittany. The department, however, complained that the request was complex and voluminous, and twice asked for an extension to the 30-day statutory time frame to respond. Besides, he had yet to have time to have an official meeting with Jenny about how regular humans should respond or feel on that and a number of other matters, including types of foods that humans like. Currently the top of the presented list did appear to be curries, so he's gone hard and fast on the curries, and on matters of what a father actually does, so leading a series of photos themed around pretending to build things, you know, like a good father does. It's sort of like if the Terminator ran an Instagram account named Just a Regular Human Doing Regular Human Things. And we've come once again to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for those of you who made it all the way through, stuck around, listened. I really appreciate your time every time. If you're new, please do the subscription thing. Hang around. Listen again. Recommend it to a friend. Someone you think would enjoy it. Maybe someone you think would enjoy it more than you did. I don't know. I don't know how you felt about it. But tell somebody, please. Come see my shows. Live shows. Some new live shows. Remember, my show is called Wage Against the Machine. It's a storytelling, satire, and social commentary show about jobs that I no longer need to worry about being fired from. Huzzah. It'll be a good time. I'm really looking forward to telling you some stories and just getting out there, spilling some of the tea when it comes to poverty. Good times for all. Look after yourselves. Stay safe. Get vaccinated. Get your booster. Get your booster shots. Things getting crazy out there. And I'll see you on the road.